Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And today we are joined by LaRob Payton.
Hey guys.
How are you today?
I am swell
today. It's so good to see you.
It's wonderful to see you both.
Just had a big old birthday, right?
I did have a big old birthday.
Big old birthday. Big old birthday.
We bonded at the gate because we're both doing like a... Yours, I think, honestly, is much more stated in a fantastic way, but like a kind of 90s thing.
Mm.
Is that the color palette I'm thinking of? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I could see that, yeah.
Like the bold, the like heavily saturated, like
right.
Very bold. Yeah, colors.
Almost like almost pastel-y.
Right, your jacket almost is giving me, this is like a very nice version of this, but like vibes of the, it's the same color palette as the, on the buses, the seats on buses. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh my god, actually though, like the CTA buses.
Yeah.
The pattern on the seats.
Yeah, but like
that,
the pattern's way better, but it's the same color palette.
I'm a CTA
or also
bus.
I'm thinking of like Nickelodeon, like, you know, those kind of colors. I think those are really good colors.
I'm also getting kind of like a Santa Fe feel.
Yeah, I can see that.
Desert vibes.
Desert. Yeah. You know, it was... Chicago decided it was going to spit out 58 degrees today, so I was like, you know what, I'm going to put on a light jacket and see how that gets me through the day.
You got it.
Today at my cafe job, I'm in charge of coming up with the drink specials, and the drink special I came up with today was an iced drink.
Ooh.
It was inspired by a beachside drink that my family and I had on vacation once, called the BBC.
Ooh.
And it was Bailey's banana and coconut, just blended up.
Hmm.
And it was the goddamn best thing. That, like, just everybody in my family, like, just from the moment we arrived to the moment we left, all of us just had these BBCs in our hands. And so I was like, I found banana extract at my job, and I was like, oh, banana extract. I wonder what I could do. BBC.
Well, I had half a cup of it today when you brought it home, and it gave me... Have you ever had boba tea?
Yes.
It gave me strong boba tea vibes for some reason, because not everything does. I think it's because...
It's because it's shaken.
Yeah, and the starchiness, I think, reminds me a lot. I used to love... there was a spot in Orlando that did, like, a taro avocado one.
Interesting.
Oh, man. Because I love taro.
Yeah.
That's why I love that soup over at Tank Noodle. Because, like, where else? No one else uses taro these days. It's so sad. Anyway, we should talk about anything else.
I don't know.
That's, like, my favorite segue of all time. All
right, let's talk about something else.
Anything else.
Anything. Really, anything else.
So, we have a cool concert coming up.
Yes.
It is on Saturday.
Yes. Very soon to come, guys.
Yeah.
We've got this really amazing opportunity to showcase songs and pieces and works that are written and composed by Black people.
Yeah.
What?
Black people create music?
No.
Mm. Oh my God. I'm sorry. I'm that reaction is not to anything we've just said, but just like I've seen so many people being now like, oh, what do you mean, like, rap music? It's like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Just a lot of, you know, anyway, sorry, we should talk about anything else.
But see, the point then is we all, you know, we studied in academia, and we learned about all these European artists and composers and poets and... You know, it gets overwhelming, and we appreciate that music. We love it dearly, but too often there are African-American composers or composers of color in general who are overshadowed by those composers. I mean, there are honestly too many to name, and each of them have their own unique styles, you know, similar composing techniques. I mean, such beautiful and vast music that should be shared with the world and should be on the same platform and performed as often as the composers that we know and love so dearly. So this concert on Saturday is going to be an opportunity for any and everybody to come out and really just appreciate this music. I mean, it's just, there's going to be some stuff that you're going to be like, this is really freaking beautiful. I mean, there's, I'm going to have a string quartet. Kudos to Chicago Solisti.
Nice.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Nice.
They are coming out and are going to play a quartet by William Grant Still, African-American composer, obviously. And I mean, it's just, it's unlike any other quartet, like string quartet I've heard. You know, it's just, what? Like, who comes up with these melodies? How is this all working together? Why does this sound so good? Why am I crying?
Oh.
So.
I'm so excited.
I'm very excited.
Yes. And then we've got some piano pieces that are going to be showcased by our amazing pianist. His name is Stephen Rawson. He's going to play some pieces by Zenobia Powell Perry, an African-American woman composer who is so crazy. I mean, her works are just like, okay, I guess that's how we play piano today, huh? But just really, really beautiful work. I mean, among spirituals and black art songs and... just, we're going to really highlight some really cool music, and everybody should be there to see it. You're not going to want to miss this.
Yeah, well, I'm really thankful for the work that you're doing here, and the work that Hearing in Color has had a chance to do, just because I think that's, like, something that from when we set out was just, like, this... the act of doing this should not be a radical act, mm-hmm. but we're very much, especially in classical music, we're in a culture where... it is, you know, and I really deeply appreciate also that even though in the general culture in which we are doing the work that we're doing, it there's also an atmosphere within, like for us and for the people that we're bringing in and for the people that you're bringing in across the board where it's not about that. It's not about it being a radical, like inclusive, like pulling up thing, but rather a like, finding beauty and excellence in the works themselves because it's there.
Right.
And I think that is, you know, as we, like, continue to do this, because of course we want to continue to do this, figuring out how to communicate that that's what this work is about, that this work should be included in programming, period. Especially in American programming, because this is what American classical music looks like.
Right.
You know, the thing that kind of really took my breath away reading today when you sent us the copy for the Facebook event was but was how you were talking about, you know, kind of trailing musical traditions and trailing these tunes from, like, from spiritual to concert hall to tunes to jazz to, you know, it's an amazing thing where musical traditions can do that. And so I'm kind of, like, curious for you, especially, like, from a programming standpoint, like, how have you thought about kind of that, the space in which black music is put into, like, as far as, like, the space that it's put into to occupy, and also... that the freedoms that it's able to have had in the years.
Right. That's a really good question. We kind of had a brief discussion about this over brunch on Sunday.
Nice.
Where we were kind of asking the question, are spirituals considered art songs? And that, it's tricky. And I, to be quite honest, I don't know my answer. I don't know if they are or if they aren't. But what I can appreciate about them is the legacy that they bring from both sides of the spectrum, and the you know, the space that they're given is, you know, as a spiritual and as something that is seen as, you know, religious and dear, and brought from this generation of people who only had their voices and music and melodies in their head to kind of carry them through, and using that as not only a way to hone into their faith and their hope, but also using it as a platform to be able to be political in such a time when they were given no political power. And, you know, there are many, many spirituals that have subtext and context about, you know, ideas about slavery and about, you know, protesting and things that people don't take the time out to really analyze and research, because too often spirituals are seen as a seclusive genre or style of music. And like you said before, I mean, this is American music. It should be programmed in American, you know, classical concerts in that way. But also then going on the other end of the spectrum and how spirituals influence art song. And not just art song by Black composers. There are spirituals that influence songs, you know, written by some of our most famous composers, you know. The idea of using kind of a subtext to speak politically about things, you know, when you aren't given that political power, how can we voice our opinion about what's going on in the world without being further subjugated? Mm-hmm. How can we use this and make it our own, but still say that, you know, hell no, we won't go.
Right.
Without, you know, being forced out, I guess. It's I don't know. I think that spirituals and Black art songs need to be given their space, need to be given the space in the classical genre, period. And I will always believe that they need to be performed, they need to be respected, they need to be researched. I mean, you wouldn't sing a Schubert art song, or you wouldn't sing a Schubert lead, or, you know, a Fauré melodie without researching what the composer meant, what the text is about, where right. he got the text from. Mm-hmm. That same diligence needs to be taken for all of this music. And I mean, that's the point of this concert, is to say the same diligence, the same excellence, the same, you know, standard that we hold for all of this other music is here for Black art song and spiritual, and, you know, music written by Black composers.
Yeah, you've hit on a few things that I've been thinking. No, no, it's great. Yep. It's fantastic. There are a few things though that I've been thinking about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I know I've been thinking about a lot, and I know that we have quite a few white listeners too.
Mm-hmm.
And as a white person, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, because this is not a conversation that we should have go away. This is a conversation we very much need to have.
Oh yeah.
But I also think that in a lot of ways, it's hard for white folks to say what is a productive thing in this conversation. And I'm prefacing that with that just solely because I think it's really important to verbalize that that's something that I do when it comes to these conversations, now that we've been having them more, and we should have them more, and all this stuff. I'm just verbalizing that that's something that I think that of the many things that white folks need to check for themselves, that's something that's super important, is just being like, what is productive? And to that point, the thing that I have been thinking about a lot is when we're talking about comparing the way that white works are treated in the classical music world and the way that Black works have been treated, you know, the thing that you've kind of really touched on is, you know, it's one thing to just program it, because obviously some folks do that, some organizations do that, some organizations will go and do some research and do some work, but to ignore the fact that the difference between Puccini and Still is that Puccini was picked out by Ricordi,
mm-hmm.
Was funded, was his life was funded, his work was received, and we continue to program it, and he was able to, and this is where it's important to check, because I also don't want to say that like the greatness he received was only because he, like, comparing. My point here though is that there is, you know, it's getting into this conversation of looking at kind of what infrastructure does for a composer's work. Mm-hmm. And I think that in a lot of ways we look at that. You know, there was something that I had written about, and we've talked about the editorial in the podcast like 3 times. There was something that I wrote about in the editorial about the idea of production value. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I put it in quotes. I think that there were a couple people that misread it, because what I meant to say is not to say that black works don't deserve that production value, but we've assigned so much production value to works of you know, that we've considered
standard,
right? Exactly, right. Because mm-hmm. we've assigned that to them. You know, we've assigned that these works should have the high production value, mm-hmm. and so saying that we need to rethink the production value bar is just that, not that that's a lowering of that thing, because mm-hmm. it's putting a linear delineation on something that isn't a linear delineation. Mm. Something that I think that, you know, is a big piece to all of this. But anyway, so kind of my point here is that, you know, with this work going forward, like thinking about what, and even the word outreach is so colored at this point. And I don't mean, you know what I mean by that, not, but it has such a connotation. But thinking about the work that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. I think that finding that space that is doing extensive research, doing experimentation, figuring out what this all needs to work about, and actually having the conversations is something that I think that, and I guess I don't know why, like, why at this point, I mean, like, civil rights has been something that we've been knocking on the door of for decades. Like, what has made classical music the holdout, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's tricky. I mean, classical music has forever been this kind of elitist thing. Mm-hmm. It's been, you know, this art form, the art form of the rich, I guess, if you will. So it's tricky. I mean, to your point, I think there's a big I feel like this generation of classical singers have a responsibility almost to try and tip the scale, you know, a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I'll use an example. So I just did an audition this past weekend, and I thought it went fine. So I opened with a Mozart aria, the catalog aria. And they asked me what else I had, and I told them that I had, you know, a Wagner piece, I had some Tchaikovsky, and then I said that I had a Howard Swanson piece, which was a black art song. And 3 of the teachers were like, what is that? Mm. 3 of the, I mean, these are faculty members who assumedly have been studying music, period, for a while. You know, 3 of them were just kind of like, what is that? And that's not to say that the other teachers had no idea what it was, or that they did. You know, those were just the 3 responses I got. What is that?
Yeah.
So I was like, well, it's an art song written by an African-American composer. And they were like, oh, let's hear that. And it was an opportunity for me at that moment in this audition to showcase this piece in excellence. I mean, in its excellence. And afterwards, they were like, wow, I've never heard that piece before, and it was amazing, you know. And I had a conversation with one of the teachers after the audition, and she said to me, you know, where did you, you know, where are you finding these pieces? You know, how did you come across this? This needs to be performed, you know. And I said to her, I mean, I was fortunate to find it and to kind of just be digging and find the book, the Black Art Song compilation, but I agree with you. I think that this music needs to be done. So it's situations like that that I think little by little can begin to open everybody's eyes about what this music it's. I mean, and then it's relatable too. I mean, as long as the research has been done, and that's it, the good point. The point here is that there has to be a level of diligence taken. Absolutely. To this music, because you don't want to just program the music. You don't want to you as a white man show up to an audition singing "The Negro Speaks of Rivers,"
right,
you know, in front of a completely white audience. River. You know, you don't want to do that no. because then you're going to get, the people are going to be raising their eyebrows and you're going to have to answer the question for yourself, why am I singing this song?
Yeah.
But if you've done the diligence and the research and you are, you know, here we go, this conversation about appreciation versus appropriation,
mm-hmm.
you know, take the diligence to appreciate the music, you yeah. know. Take the time to research it, understand what it means, because not only are you understanding what the context of the song is, you're now gaining some empathy and an insight to a struggle that people have been trying to express for a millennia, you know? So I think that there are hidden pieces of justice and equality in just that, in taking the time to recognize that you don't know, that you know, it's okay to want to know, and then appreciating it in that way, and not trying to dominate it, but, you know, be a voice with it, I guess.
I completely agree. And it's something that, you know, we've been talking about a lot in the last year that we've been doing this. Because, I mean, we've even, you know, we've mentioned this on the show, like, we've even made such growth about understanding kind of like our
blind spots,
pieces of the puzzle, like what we bring to the table and what we need to, like, how we think about it. Because I think that, you know, I'm sorry that I keep bringing up the editorial, but another thing that is really
just
important.
Stop apologizing and just bring it up.
Well, because the other thing that I think is really important and is a lesson recently learned is that racism is a layered issue.
Yep.
It's really easy to call someone being a blatantly racist person racist, but it's something else entirely. This line, the lines that we're talking about here of appreciation versus appropriation,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that is something that I think that as we continue this work and continue being a part of it and experiencing it through folks that are doing such amazing work and working to do that research, but it is about that diligence. Sorry, go ahead.
Have you seen, when you brought up race being a layered issue, it reminded me, have you two seen that video of Your Black Friend?
I think I've seen that.
It's like, yeah, it's this black man who is doing this voiceover of an animation of, like, he's sitting in a coffee shop eating a sandwich that he brought in, and he's overhearing a conversation between the white barista and, like, a middle-aged white woman talking about how she called the cops on this young black man who was leaving a backyard with a bicycle, and the barista was like, oh, describe him. And she was like, oh, well, the bike looked like this and the guy looked like this. And she was like, oh, that sounds like my friend Darren. That's his house.
Right.
And so, like, and, like, then just, like, this moment where the guy was waiting for the barista to call out this woman,
mm-hmm.
and she didn't.
Mm.
And so, like, and the voiceover went from there to talk about that type of racism.
Right.
And as white people, it's something I had never thought of, like, and I think that it ultimately goes back to that onus of education of, like, if we notice problematic behavior and we notice people's blind spots,
mm-hmm.
it shouldn't be up to our black friend to be like, hey, lady, that was super racist,
right.
that you just assumed that he was stealing a bike when really it was his backyard.
Yeah, no, you're the... to that video's title, Your Black Friend should be focused on doing the research. Doing the, like, I want every person, marginalized person I know to be able to, like, do what they want to do.
Mm.
Figure out how to do the work they want to do and do it well and do it thoroughly and not focus on dealing with middle-aged racists,
mm.
and not race, and I don't mean, because the other thing too is, like, racist is now a dirty word in some way, like, it's like this whole thing of, like, it's not equivalent
Oof.
To the N-word or something, like, it's not the, like, that whole argument that I've heard now.
I mean, you hear racist and you think of a, you know, you think of, like, shaved head holding a tiki torch. With the whip. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, you know,
It's so funny. I just had this situation. Again, I was in Michigan over the weekend, and I had a voice teacher in undergrad who I absolutely love dearly. He is an older white male who is very, very, I'll say, aware. And we had a conversation where he goes, you know, I am a white 68-year-old man, and I am the target for everybody. You know, he's like, anything wrong in the world, the first person people look at is me, because I am 68 years old, I'm white, and I'm a male. And I'm like, I mean, kind of. But his, you know, his point was, and this is a part of this conversation, is he was saying, like, this idea that racist is such a burden to bear for white people. You know, it's like, oh God, please don't let me be racist.
It's like our deepest fear.
Seriously, yeah. You know? And he was asking, you know, how for lack of a better word, he was saying, I'm woke, you know, why is it that I can't enter these conversations? Why can't I enter a space and be an ally and not be seen as a 68-year-old white male? And I was like, well, it's because you're a 68-year-old white male. That is not going away.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to consider yourself an ally, you can do that. But you have to understand that these conversations are going to be difficult.
Yeah.
The conversations about race, like you said, racism is a layered thing. There are things that are going to come up constantly that you're going to be like, wait, I didn't know that was racist. Okay, now I know that it's racist now. Let me constantly check that. Right. It's a continuous thing. It's not an easy conversation to have, but acknowledging that you are willing to step back, listen to people who have an experience that you don't, be empathetic, and then take that back, you know, and deal with it on your own. One of the best things that I learned, so I was going to therapy for a while, and this thing that my therapist said to me was probably one of the most profound things that I've ever heard, and I'll use it in every situation ever in my life. She said, you know, when somebody tells you that you hurt them, you don't get to, like, justify, you don't get to tell them why you hurt them. You know, like, if I tell you, Daniel, hey, like, that hurt me, you don't get to be like, well, I get it, but, like, see, I was thinking that this is what was going on in my head when I was doing this, so you really shouldn't be hurt because I was thinking about it this way. You can't do that. You have to take a moment and say, wow, this person was affected by what I did. Regardless of if I felt like I was justified in doing it, I have to take a step back and analyze what it is that I did that caused a problem, and recognize that it could potentially be a problem for other people too.
Mm-hmm.
So just taking a step back and analyzing what it is that is troubling, and figuring out how best you can, like, make, you know, or reconcile with it on your own, you know, and then come back to the conversation in that way. It's, like I said, the conversation about race is going to be forever, and it's going to be difficult. It's not an easy thing to do.
Absolutely. And there's some of it that's, sorry.
That actually super resonated with me, because that's something that I've been guilty of, is someone saying to me what you said hurt me, and me being like, well, let me explain why I said it. You know, let me explain what I actually meant.
Mm.
And it's really, like, as, you know, as the person who is trying really hard to stop doing that, it's really hard to stop doing that.
And it's internalized.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's something that we've been, you know, over the 200 episodes we've done, there have been folks that have called us out on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And I think the first time it happened, and we've referenced it now, I think, by now, but was saying you guys was something that we got called out on pretty early. And I remember it, like, at first it kind of ruffled my feathers for, like, a day, because I was, you know, privileged as fuck.
Yeah, we were talking to an organization that was run by women, and we were saying, so what do you guys have in your upcoming season? And they were like, actually, we're a group of women. We're not guys. We would prefer if you didn't use such gendered language. And they said that to us on the air.
Mm. So if anything, that's probably the most reason why, like, anything, if anything, why it stayed with me, I guess, is the thing. But I'm glad that it did, because it made me actually think about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it was the first time, that it had happened. First of all, it was the first, because we went into this experience feeling like we were, like, on it. Like, we were
cool, like, leftists. Like, look at us.
Look how good we are on every issue. Yeah. Ask me about an issue. I'm on the right side of history. Yeah. But it's like, but, like.
Can we please make you a commercial, please? Yeah. Oh, my God.
No, but
this
it's
commercial is sponsored by Laurent Payton.
Yeah, right. Really?
No, but it's PSA. And so to be called out, first of all, on a recording so that everybody could hear it.
Yep.
And then also to be called out at all was just like, so it was so eye-opening and really, I think, set the stage for everything that we've learned so far. And, like, I wouldn't trade that moment of red face for anything.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's really important to talk about it. It's something that I'm the reason why I'm glad we're talking about it, because that's what this conversation is going to look like for privileged folks.
Yeah.
And it's you know, red-faced. It's not fun, but
red-faced.
Like,
yeah.
You're going to be embarrassed. You have to enter these conversations knowing that you're going to make an idiot of yourself, and you're going to be embarrassed, and you're going to step on somebody's toes, and you're going to force them to step up and say, hey, what you said is wrong.
Yep.
And the thing is, it's hard for that person to say, hey, what you're saying is wrong.
Right.
And so to then meet that person with resistance makes it even harder for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, last year we had the Mac concert, and, you know, after that concert, we had a discussion with an audience who was majority white, and one of the questions asked was, you know, like, how do we have a conversation, you know, about race? How do we, you know, deal with these conversations that are often tense? And I was like, listen, you've got to be okay with being uncomfortable. You've got to be okay with setting your privilege to the side for a moment and letting somebody who doesn't have that privilege speak up. Because that's what often this situation is. It's somebody in that coffee shop's going, hey, you can't say that to that person. And you being like, okay, red-faced. You know, like, I want to justify myself, but let me recognize that this person is trying to oftentimes help, you know. And nobody, and it's tricky because I don't think anybody wants to call anybody a racist just to call anybody a racist.
It's a hard thing to call someone.
Seriously. I seriously think we're in an age now where people are just becoming so aware of how detrimental certain things that are said are to communities, that if somebody calls you a racist, you must realize that you've said something that is really detrimental and hurtful to a community of people. So take that and just, you know, analyze it and deal with it. You know, you've got to be okay with being uncomfortable in these situations. And it's going to happen often.
Yeah, I also think that there's a certain like arrogance to thinking that you're never wrong. Mm. That I think that is arrogance is a strong word, but I mean it. And I wouldn't use any stronger word than that, because I don't want to, like, break anybody's poor little heart that thinks they're right all the time. But, like, like, that's something that, you know, I know I've thought about a lot, because it's something that kind of, you know, I come from a long line of people that are right, that are professionally right. And I think that at a certain point, being able to just be like, you know what, I've made a mistake, is something that I think that it's important to think about, and it's important to recognize that space and to do that, because it's just not even, you know, something even outside of the race conversation. It's like, that is so important for everyday life. Like, when it's like, how do you expect to learn anything if you're not willing to be wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I love cooking, you know? Like, I love baking and stuff now, and it's like, you can't do it that without being like, oh, this is, I did this wrong this right. time, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. I mean, me and Megan Fletcher have this conversation all the time, but like, all humans ever want to do is connect with people. That's all we want to do. If you freely give up your capacity to connect with somebody, then you get this arrogance of, I'm never wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm always right. Nothing I can say can be wrong. I'm always on the right side. I have this privilege. I can talk over you. It builds up. But if you freely give up your ability to connect and be empathetic with people, and checking your privilege and setting yourself aside and being uncomfortable in situations where you are, you know, need not be the voice there, are human things. It's a human act of wanting to connect with somebody. You know, I'm not, like I said, nobody wants to call you a racist. I'm telling you, you know, that's racist because I want you to understand it, and therefore you won't say it again, and we can connect as human beings then. You know, and again, like you said, it's in life. It's not just about the conversation about race. It's about wanting to be a human being and be connecting to everybody and all people.
Yeah. I very recently had a situation where I was on the other end of, like, I should have said something because I was being treated poorly. Mm. I was this person's not listening. We're interviewing people for sales positions, mm-hmm. and I had a phone interview with a person. And he talked over me the entire time. He told me that he claimed to have invented sponsored content, which is hilarious. But he basically spent most of the conversation telling me how the magazine should be run, telling me what sections we need to add, and saying, like, well, you heard it here first. I think that you can pull this off. And Daniel was in the room with me, and I was leading this conversation, and we were messaging back and forth. He was like, why aren't you saying anything? Why aren't you cutting him off?
Yeah, because I'm so used to, like, being like, fuck you, dude. Like,
exactly. But in the back of my mind, you know, this is, like, a middle-aged white man. Right. In the back of my mind, I'm like, if I say something, he's going to call me a bitch. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be called a bitch today. Mm. And so I just let him walk over me. And so the idea, and like, so in that moment, on a very small scale, I was like, this is what marginalized folks deal with every fucking day. And the fact that this happened to me 2 weeks ago and it still stuck with me, like, first of all, how lucky am I that it happened to me 2 weeks ago and not since then? Mm-hmm. And also, like, what can I do as a person with the privilege to have that one time really stick with me, as opposed to, you know, remembering one time out of every seven or mm-hmm. whatever? Like, what can I do as a person with that privilege to help folks avoid that situation in the future? Mm-hmm. Like, it's really eye-opening.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, you have opened that doorway now for you to, in situations where you see somebody dealing with that situation, you cannot turn a blind eye now.
No.
Like, because you've been through that situation now, you cannot see somebody on the train being called out of their name and not say anything. It's mm-hmm. going to be uncomfortable if you do.
Yeah.
You're going to sit there and be like, wow, I should speak up. Yeah. That is human empathy. Yeah. That's human connection. Wanting to help, wanting and realizing, I've been through this. I know what this feels like. I know what this person sitting there is feeling like. This sucks. I need to speak up. How can I help? That's what this is about. That's what all of this is about, is being connected and being empathetic. I mean, thinking about what you guys have been through over the past few weeks now with this crap going on.
We shall not. Nazi-gate?
Oh, God. That.
That's been the most, the easiest way to reference it.
Nazi-gate. You know, the idea here is these people have freely given up the idea to want to be connected to other people.
Yeah.
So you sit on your high horse and you call names from, you know, above because you can do no wrong in the world. And everybody else is down here living and trying to be connected and whatever, and you're just like, I'm fine where I am, I guess. That's all it is, you know. The denial of human connectivity and realizing that we're all connected and we all have an ability to be empathetic, and it's sad. It's really sad. But that is that what you just explained, Maureen, is like, hit the nail on the head with, now you have a doorway into, you know, experience.
And, yeah.
You know, you don't have the same experiences.
No.
But you understand. You can, if that shook you the way it did 2 weeks ago, you can understand somebody being like, hey, can you not say the N-word because I don't, you
because
know,
it's just like, you know, just,
you know, it just kind of sucks.
References like centuries of oppression and
right, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I want to circle back to this program. Yes. If that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
We've mentioned already there's a kind of a varied instrumentation, but kind of what's the, is there like a scope of like of beginning to end? Is it just kind of like, yeah,
it's still in the works. there are a lot of moving pieces right now.
Mm-hmm.
But what I will say, and I kind of just as we were talking have kind of put this together in my head, of the idea that, you know, starting the lineage from way back when all African American people who were brought over here and around the globe was their voice and these melodies in their heads to sing, to hum, you know, and then eventually we, you know, it grew into an art form of song, of expression, of social justice. And how all of that bleeds into every bit of the genre, you know. Composers of piano music, composers of opera, composers of art song and spirituals, all these black composers share an experience, share this same lineage, and you can see it and hear it in the music. So the program consists of, you know, spirituals, you know, famous spirituals like Let Us Break Bread Together, songs like God is a God, these ideas of like peace and a peace that you can't find on earth even, a lot of reference to heaven and God, because, I mean, if I was somebody from back in that time, I wouldn't want to reference anything about America, you know? I mean, but still, having this faith, there are a lot of pieces that talk about faith, and even in the piano works, I've heard, you can hear the, like, struggle, and but also a joy, kind of, something like a hope in the piano chords, I can't really explain. Which means you have to be there to hear it. But yeah, there's some programming, definitely. There's gonna be a clear sense of, oh, this is what this is. I think I can feel what this is. And I mean, the group of singers we have, I have no doubt will be able to understand that message and pass it along to the audience.
Well, that really hits on something for me. Something that I'm trying to remember who we talked about this with recently, but the idea of being taken away from by something, like with Kristen Leidy about horror movies, just something you see or experience, being so moving or thrilling or scary or anything, right? That it takes you out of your own life, you know? That is something that is so valuable. And kind of, it's an unnameable quality to a piece of art or a piece of anything, really. Mostly art. But, you know, I think that is what, you know, we talked about this before we started recording. We haven't seen Black Panther yet. We very much want to. We're just really bad. Like, we have, like, no... And we also have no movie... We haven't seen a movie in a theater since we've started dating.
Larab disapproves.
2 years.
Your disapproval is strongly registered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's... This is a moment where I am willing to be wrong publicly. A moment where I am... Red-faced, like, and like...
Yeah, no, I mean, like, we're having a very thoughtful conversation about race and we haven't seen fucking Black Panther. So, like, yes, egg on my face. I'm an idiot. Oh my
goodness. But also, I have not even seen the first Avengers. Mm. Not to like, I'm just... Anyway, I don't know why I'm, like, qualifying. Here we go, right? Anyway.
Stop defending it. We haven't seen it.
So the reason why I brought it up was... Because that is, you know, I'm a little familiar with the lore of Black Panther, and just the idea of that's very much what it seems like Wakanda is. Mm. The experience of being taken away to a space that is entirely black, that is thriving, you know? Like, that can exist, because that's something that it's hard to find, especially for a diasporic culture, that especially for American folks that have been brought here, that don't have that space.
Yeah.
I think that's so powerful, and something that it's something that whatever that quality is that I still haven't really put into that taking you away from your experience quality.
Mm.
Like, I've just starting to recognize these last couple weeks that experience is such a white experience. Like white dominated, I'll say. I obviously, but I think that's kind of what that magic, you mentioned that magic of that very specific spiritual tonality, right? That just takes you. Like, right. It does. And it's, but that's, like, to find things like that, I think it's so important, because the world is dark and scary and hard, and it's getting harder by the day.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I don't really have a question from that. I just, that's something that I've been thinking about and wanted to verbalize.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of this music is transcending. And so just a little bit about me and my spiritual background. So I grew up in church all the time. So the text in spirituals is not unfamiliar to me often. You know, I believe in a higher God. And to the idea, but the idea of needing something in moments of trauma is not unfamiliar to people who have experienced trauma.
Right.
You know, the idea of needing a place to go, something to rely on, something to lean on, something to call on, is something that I think everybody understands and can empathize with. You know, there are small moments in life where we're like, oh God, I really wish I had XYZ, you know. It's a universal idea of needing something to help. And this is something that black people across centuries have constantly had. And so it's deep within the music, and you can feel it and hear it and experience it in melody and text, and, you know, just understanding how much we rely on our inner self to kind of pull us through, you know. It's a very powerful thing, and I think that it should be shared with the world. I do believe that. You feel a sense of pride with it, obviously. Speaking of Black Panther, you feel this, like, very strong sense of pride in seeing so many people with such a strong lineage together and appreciating that culture and appreciating the spirit in in the I guess culture. But yeah, I think that it's something that can be related to by everybody. And that's the point of doing Hearing in Color, is that it's sharing this wealth of culture with the world and saying, hey, like, this is good stuff.
Yeah.
And we think you need to hear this. Like, this is good. And don't shy away from it when you see it, you know. Don't think that you can't appreciate it because it doesn't got your name on it, you know. You can appreciate it as long as you respect it.
Nice. Well, I mean, honestly, we have a few minutes left. So we should, the last thing we do with all of our guests mm-hmm. is a 1 minute plug for anything they have upcoming. Sometimes it's very obvious, like a concert this weekend.
like a concert this Saturday. Oh my God.
Oh my God, what? Oh my
God. What? But we also, you know, it doesn't have to be this also, like it doesn't have to be both things, but we also love hearing other shout outs of other folks that are doing dope work. As well as any self-care things, any media that you're consuming, TV, movies, books, anything like that.
If nobody is listening to the podcast Criminal, if you're into crime stories, weird things, mysteries, and you want a really good crime story podcast, please listen to Criminal. I've really been into Phoebe. And here's my thing about the podcast. It's not even the stories, really. It's Phoebe. You're gonna love her. I don't know what it is about her voice, but she's got this kind of tone. She's just like, and welcome back, this is Phoebe.
Yeah, nice.
And it just feel like she's like really involved in the story, and sometimes she does interviews with the people, and it's a really good podcast. I recommend it.
Nice.
So yeah, there's that. That's what I've been listening to recently.
Nice.
Self-care. Eat sweets if you can. I mean, eat them in moderation, but I had a cake yesterday for my birthday, and it really just made me feel good. I hadn't had a cake or anything in a long time.
We have cake in our fridge right now.
I'm actually, amazing. I wasn't gonna, cake. I'm gonna, actually, I want to give you this cake, because it's your birthday, and I've had, no. too much cake.
Okay, wait. I have so much more cake in my apartment.
You're leaving with more cake, because let me tell you about this cake. It's a Fruity Pebbles cake.
Oh, I saw this post. I saw this, and I saw you making it, and I was like, this is dangerous. What is happening?
It was dangerous, and oh my God, what happened?
Yeah.
Well, I will definitely leave with a piece of Fruity Pebble cake.
Good.
I'm okay cool. with that.
Yes, I'm gonna... I cut you off.
Eat sweets.
Be nice to people. That's self-care, you yeah. know? Yeah. Karma is a really powerful thing, guys. Like, be nice. Just be nice.
Yeah.
Even when you don't want to, you know, mm-hmm. be nice. If you don't have anything nice to say, shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just being weird now.
No, you're fine. I know we've talked about it the entire episode, but I'm going to hammer down to come out this weekend. I'm really excited about it. We don't do a lot of programming through Scoppy as far as, like, events right now, just because it's hard. And
it's hard and we're tired.
You know, we did a bunch over the summer, and it's still something that we always want to do and think about. And there was a moment between the summer and the whatever season we are in now that we were like, well, okay, what kind of program are we going to do? And there was never a moment where we were like, Hearing in Color is a thing that we're gonna take a pause on. Mm. Because it is so important. It is so vital. We're so thankful to everyone that has done work with it in the past and that continue to do work, it, especially with Larab. Thank you, Larab.
Thank you, guys.
And this concert is just going to be something else. So please come out.
Emerald City Coffee. The address is 1224 West Wilson. It starts at 7 o'clock. Nice. We are putting it as pay what you can. We're not going to put any sort of like $10 just a donation. Although, if you've got 10 bucks and you're able to give that would be amazing. The money that we're collecting is, we're not lining your pockets with it. It's like going right back into making this concert
happen.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether that's paying the performers, whether that's ensuring that more concerts like this can happen, like, we're not going out for drinks afterward with it. So please, if you're able to throw in a couple bucks, That would be amazing. And we can't wait to see you. Yes, you there.
Cool. Thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we are up to, there are so many ways to do that. Before I get into our social media stuff, I'm going to say that our podcast name has changed. So you probably didn't notice. I mean, you must have noticed that we haven't been putting out as many podcast episodes. It's because we've gone through, for a lot of different reasons, but one of them is there were a couple of days where we couldn't post anything because we switched the way in which we publish podcasts. There's a lot of back-end stuff to that, and I'm not going to go into that right now because you don't deserve that. But basically, our podcast is no longer Scoppy Mag. If you were getting our podcast from an Android service, please write into the show and let me know if you're no longer getting new episodes. Oh, fuck, you wouldn't be getting this right now.
No, I don't think that the feed has changed. It's just that if you're searching for our podcast, because I'm still subscribed to our podcast feed. It's just that it's now a different name.
Yeah.
Now it's Scoppy Radio instead of Scoppy Mag. So if you're searching for us, it's now Scoppy Radio.
Yeah, and I'm going to do this as a editing thing for the next couple episodes because it's important for people to know that it's no longer Scoppy Mag, it's Scoppy Radio when you search it on iTunes, which is cool. We like, you know, that's, it probably is a name that makes more sense. It was a mistake, not a mistake, but it was not like on purpose, but it's good. Anyway, I'm going to wrap up. Otherwise, you can keep up with us on social media. On Facebook, we have a Facebook group. It's called Sounding Board. It's so much fucking fun. I add people to it all the time, and we love getting requests and stuff. So if you want to, please request yourself.
If we don't know you personally, then we recommend answering the questions.
Yeah, if I don't know you personally and you don't answer the questions, we'll probably not accept it. Just because it's...
Nazi-gate.
Yeah, among other things. So that sounding board, check it out. On Facebook, we have a page, Scoppy Magazine. On Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Scoppy Mag, sorry, I have to change it now, Scapimag. And on the podcast places, we're under Scoppy Radio.
Cool. And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a shoestring budget. Everything that we've been able to do up to this point has been through your generosity. So first of all, thank you so much. Second of all, we could use a little bit more help. If you're in a position to give, you can head to our website, scoppymag.com, and go to our donate section. There are a couple ways that you can give. First of all, you could do a one-time donation. If you choose to do that, you will have our eternal gratitude. Otherwise, for as little as $5 a month, you can support our mission of uplifting local arts and independent media. If you're interested in advertising opportunities, please feel free to reach out to us at scoppymag@gmail.com. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.